Om Ganatamanandasya Janajana Salakaya Chakshusamilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Lupakada Mayam Dadati Sahapanatikam Vanja Gopatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaibhascha Pratitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Cricket Maharaj expressed his concern for those who have sinned and will therefore be suffering. Maharaj Sukadev Goswami first recommended prayas-citta, or ritualistic atonement, which removes the sin, the reaction to the sin, rather. Sukadev Goswami's, or rather, Cricket Maharaj's reply was, doesn't seem appropriate, because although the immediate reaction is removed, but yet what is left is the tendency to sin. And that tendency to sin will cause one to sin, and the causing one to sin will cause one again to suffer. So Sukadeva Goswami's reply to that was, yes, you have understood accurately that this is useless, basically speaking, this atonement, because one can never really continuously atone. And one will commit so many errors, so many sinful activities, and therefore one will have to suffer. So therefore, he said, the real atonement is deeper. The real atonement is attaining knowledge. Knowledge is on different levels. The first and simplest level is that we are eternal, that we are souls. And this is the ABC knowledge that Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Dehenos vinyata dehe komanam jovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyate. That we're eternal souls, and as we pass from boyhood to youth to old age, while within this body even, there is a continuity of identity. We exist when we're in a child's body, a youth's body, and an old person. It is us. It is the same person. So there's something that doesn't change. And that same thing that doesn't change throughout all the different changes of the body similarly doesn't change when the body dies. So to understand this basic knowledge changes one's activities, because if one identifies or thinks oneself that I am the body, I am my body, which is basically, the body is just the senses, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the mouth, and the skin. That's what we see when we look in the mirror. So if we think we're the body, we're our bodies, then what do we want to do? We want to be happy. So how to be happy thinking that we're our bodies? We try to make our body happy. Putting finery around it so that the sense of touch is stimulated. Putting all the other sense objects around the body. Fragrance. Beautiful sights to see. We'll go sightseeing continuously. Hearing the most fine sounds on the finest musical instruments or reproductory machines that produce fine sounds, etc. We'll just want to taste the most food that we particularly have a taste for and that gives us pleasure. That's if we think we're our body. But as soon as we think that we're not the body, that we think we're eternal, our whole concept of what to do for pleasure also changes. The whole concept changes, and one's activities change if we actually realize this. What to speak of if we have deeper knowledge, knowledge that not only we are eternal, but we're eternally servants. What to speak of if we have still deeper knowledge that we are Krishna's eternal servant, and Krishna isn't vague understanding of who God is, but he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, existing in Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, Sukadev recommends the process of knowledge. First jnana, knowing that we're not our body, and then he gradually brings it up to the point of kechit kevalaya bhaktya narayana prayana agam dunvanti kartsneya, that all the sinful reactions are completely removed, completely. And what's the example that he uses? Just as, I'll give you a hint, it's not as the fire burns the creepers and leaves underneath the bamboo, because that will come back, but the sun, niharam eva baskara, baskara means the sun, how the sun dissipates fog, and there's no root left when the fog is dissipated, like the, when the fire burns the leaves on the ground underneath the bamboo, and burns even the bamboo stalks, the bamboo will grow back with the first rains. But when the sun dissipates the fog, there is no more growing back of the fog. There is no root left. So similarly, when one performs pure devotional service, it removes to the root the tendency to sin, to act inappropriately. And that is the proper, the complete removal, the natural, the complete removal of the reactions. The atonement, it performs the function of atonement by removing all sins in all different stages. Prabdha, aparabdha, kutta, bija, as we heard yesterday. So now, and then he explains in the final verses of this chapter that if a sinful person engages in the service of a bona fide devotee, this tatpurusha nasevaya, and thus learns how to dedicate his life unto the lotus feet of Krishna, he can be completely purified. He cannot be completely purified by performing the practices of jnana, such as austerity, penance, brahmacharya, and the other methods of atonement, because those are external, the heart, in the deepest core of our sense of identity. Who we feel we are, that is where the ultimate atonement must take place, the ultimate purification, in the sense of who we are. And we have to see ourselves, understand ourselves as Krishna's. And also, we have to understand what is ours. And we have to understand ultimately that Krishna is ours. So this comes about, this complete change of heart, of consciousness, the ultimate atonement, the ultimate purification comes about by service, tatpurushana sevaya, Krishna of the devotees. And this path is the most auspicious path. It is free from fear. It is authorized from the Shastra, by the Shastra. And it is far superior to even the practice of jnana or any other practice of atonement, even if those are done well. Just as if one takes a pot of liquor and tries to purify it in the waters of a river. Similarly, if one doesn't develop pure devotional service, the fragrance of the tendency to act improperly will always be there, and that will lead us to acting improperly. Just like once a liquor pot, always a liquor pot. There will always be some remaining scent of the alcohol there. So similarly, unless we come to the very depths of our self-conception and remove anything overlaid over our natural relationship with Krishna, we are still not in pure consciousness unless we do that, and the tendency to fall down will always be there to commit sin and therefore to suffer. And then, contrasting that point, sakrin, even if one time, mana Krishna pararavindayor, one time one gives himself fully to Krishna, with a full-heartedly surrendering to Krishna, he will not have to suffer the reactions of his sins, and he will never see the agents of Yamaraj even in dreams. Who are the agents of Yamaraj? They are called, the Sanskrit word is Yamaduta. Duta means order carrier or messenger of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the Lord of Death. He is the punisher. He's the one who brings up our accounts, our account on the his database when the judgment day comes. Because we've done certain things in this world, good and bad. Everyone has. One can't avoid this because we're active. Dear Edward, it has to be quiet and not distracting, please. Or if you have to do something that are a little noisy, just do it all at once. And
that was the last noise.
The last noise. Sounds like the title of a book. The last noise. What is the sound of the final noise?
The bag crinkling.
The bag crinkling. What is the sound of one bag crinkling? So, how amazing is devotional service, how deeply it purifies one. Because it's not something that's dogmatic. It's acknowledging, an acknowledgement of our actual position. It's getting down to the root of who we are, and who are we? We're Krishnas. So there's no coverings over the soul when he actually understands that. So now to prove this, or to show this point, or to exemplify this point, Sukadeva Goswami is going to tell a leela, or a pastime, from the Puranas, from the very old Vedic literatures. And this pastime is of someone by the name of Ajamil. And we're going to hear something about Ajamil. In this, what I'll do is, hopefully we'll read a certain number of verses and purports today. And what I'll do is, just to get a feel of how the pastime is developing, I'll read the verses first and then we'll read some parts of some of the purports. In the city known as Kanyakubja, there was a Brahmana named Ajamil, who married a prostitute maidservant and lost all his brahminical qualities because of the association of that low-class woman. So he was noble by birth, and by association, not only association, but constant association, by marrying a prostitute, he himself became degraded. This fallen brahmana named... You remember the name? Carl? His name was Ajamil. This fallen brahmana, Ajamil, gave trouble to others by arresting them. So this is telling what he was. He was a noble person by natural tendency and by birth, and then by association, he became very degraded. And this is the some of the forms that his degradation took. He gave trouble to others by arresting them, by cheating them in gambling, or by directly plundering them. This was the way he earned his livelihood and maintained his wife and children. "My dear king," Sukadev says to Maharaj Prakrit, "while he thus spent his time in abominable sinful activities to maintain his family of many sons, 88 years of his life passed by. The old man Ajamil had 10 sons. How old was he? How old? Yes. And how many sons did he have?
10.
Yes. Of whom the youngest was a baby named Narayan. Narayan, of course, is the name of Lord Vishnu, of Krishna. Since Narayan was the youngest of all the sons, he was naturally very dear to both his father and his mother." So he had children at the age of 88. So he was still addicted to all the activities of materialistic activities. So what was his son's name?
Narayan.
Yes. And how old was he? Not the boy.
88.
Yes, the old man was 88. He was a real old timer. He was 88 years old. And how many sons did he have?
Yeah.
Right. Because of the child's broken language and awkward movements, old Ajamil was very much attached to him. He always took care of the child and enjoyed the child's activities. When Ajamil chewed food and ate it, he called the child to chew and eat. When he drank, he called the child to drink also. Always engaged in taking care of the child and calling his name. What was his name?
Narayan.
Yes, Narayan. Ajamil. So he was enjoying the energy, the playful energy of the child. He himself was old and decrepit, but yet he was enjoying his child's association that gave him life, and he had so much affection for them. So he was taking care of the child continuously, always wanting to play with the child, eat with the child, calling him, "Narayan, Narayan, come, come, come. I want to give you something to eat." And in this way, Ajamil, while remembering his son, forgot something. And what did he forget? He could not understand that his own time was now exhausted and that death was upon him. When the time of death arrived for the foolish Ajamil, just imagine, you're trying to push the fact that you're going to die to the background. You don't want to think of it. It's the last thing you want to think of. You want to think of your son. You want to be comfortable, even though you're pained in so many ways. Your body ceases to work properly. But yet the last thing you want to think of is that you're going to die, because it's a terrible, fearful thought. Because you've used your whole life. You've accumulated so many things that ultimately have no value. So terror enters the heart. Everything that we think we are, we're going to lose. Terror enters the heart. So when the time of death arrived for the foolish Ajamil, you know what adjective is used to describe Ajamil? What word before his name?
Foolish.
Foolish. Why is he considered foolish? Yeah, and he's just wasted his life, as if by forgetting that I'm going to die and not getting any knowledge, that means that I'm not going to die, or it even forestalls death. So when the time of death came, he began thinking exclusively of his son, Narayan. And even I knew this when I was a young boy, that when one is about to die, one's life flashes in front of him, and one, whatever one is attached to, one takes shelter of. The mind goes there for shelter. So he had an attachment for his son. So he began thinking of his son when he was about to die, when death was right there. Then Ajamil saw three awkward persons with deformed bodily features, fierce twisted faces, and hair standing erect on their bodies. These are the messengers or the dutas of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death. They pull the soul from the body. And many people who have had, this is documented not even in the devotional world, but many people who have had near-death experiences report having seen creatures like this. With ropes in their hands, they had come to take him away to the abode of Yamaraj. When he saw them, he was extremely bewildered, and because of attachment to his child who was playing a short distance away, Ajamil began to call him loudly by his name, Narayan, Narayan, in terror. Thus with tears in his eyes, he somehow or other chanted the holy name of Narayan. My dear king, the order carriers of Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, immediately arrived when they heard the holy name of their master from the mouth of the dying Ajamil. So he called out God's name. And therefore, the Lord of Death, Yamaraj, his messengers, who were trying to take him, they were stopped by the messengers of Vishnu, because Ajamil had certainly chanted without offense, because he had chanted in complete anxiety with a full heart. The order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of the heart of Ajamil, the husband of the prostitute, but with resounding voices as deep as thunder. The messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, forbade them to do so. When the order carriers of Yamaraj, the son of the sun god, were thus forbidden, they replied, "Who are you, sirs, that you have the audacity to challenge the jurisdiction of Yamaraj? Dear sirs, whose servants are you? Where have you come from, and why are you forbidding us to touch the body of Ajamil? Are you demigods from the heavenly planets? Are you sub-demigods? Or are you the best of devotees?" The order carriers of Yamaraj said, "Your eyes are just like the petals of lotus flowers. Dressed in yellow silken garments, decorated with garlands of lotuses, and wearing very attractive helmets on your head and earrings on your ears, you all appear fresh and youthful. Your four long arms are decorated with bows and quivers of arrows, and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers." How many arms?
Four.
Yes, very good. Do you remember what was in their arms?
Clubs, discs, lotus flowers, swords, and bows and arrows.
And what?
Bows and arrows.
Yes. Quivers, bows, and quivers. That's amazing. Very good. Quivers of arrows, and with swords, clubs, conch shells, discs, and lotus flowers. Your effulgence, they were so bright. You have dissipated the darkness of this place with extraordinary illumination. Now, sirs, why are you obstructing us? Sukadev continues to narrate this. Being thus addressed by the messengers of Yamaraj, the servants of Vasudeva, the Lord of Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, smiled and spoke the following words in voices as deep as the sound of rumbling clouds. The blessed messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, said, what does it mean when it says the blessed messengers? What's another way to pronounce B-L-E-S-S-E-D?
Yes.
Blessed. So who? Blessed means that they have been blessed. So who has blessed them? They are Vishnu Dutas, the messengers of the Lord. So who has blessed them? the Lord. So the blessed messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Duta, said, if you are actually servants of Yamaraj, they were speaking to the distorted servants of Yamaraj, whose service was to pull the souls of the sinful from their hearts as they were dying, from the hearts of the sinful persons when they were dying. If you are actually servants of Yamaraj, you must explain to us the meaning of religious principles and the symptoms of irreligion. What is the process of punishing others? Who are the actual candidates for punishment? Are all karmis engaged in fruitive activities punishable, or only some of them? So they challenged them. You are doing your duty. Now let's hear what your understanding is of what your duty is, and who are you supposed to punish? So then the Yamadutas began to reply. Let's stop here. And let's read some things. So Ajamil, going back to the beginning of this pastime of Ajamil, he was a Brahmin boy who had been degraded by bad association. He had married a prostitute. From Prabhupada's purport to text 21, Ajamil, a qualified Brahmana youth, lost all his brahminical qualities because of his association with a prostitute. But he was ultimately saved because he had begun the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, in the previous verse, Sukadev Goswami spoke of the person who has only once surrendered himself at the lotus feet of the Lord, Sakrit Mana Krishna Pararavindayor. Sakrit means just once. So he was a devotional boy, but he lost that completely. So this is not telling that one should do that, one should gain a little devotional service and chant a little bit and leave and do anything and don't worry about it because you'll be taken care of. No. Rather, it is showing the power, the potency of devotional service. In the previous verse, Sukadev Goswami spoke of the person who has only once surrendered himself at the lotus feet of the Lord, or has just begun the bhakti yoga process. Bhakti yoga begins with Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, hearing and chanting of Lord Vishnu's names, as in the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Chanting is the beginning of bhakti yoga. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declares, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Hari Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kaloa Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatiani Atta. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is chanting the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way. There is no other way. There is no other way. The process of chanting the holy name of the Lord is always superbly effective, but it is especially effective in this age of Kali. In what age is it especially effective?
Kali.
Yes. You know what the age of Kali is? Quarrel, hypocrisy, cruelty. It's called the Iron Age. Prayena payusa kalavasmi. Yugejana manda samanda mateo manda abhagya upadrutaha. Everyone is lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed in Kali Yuga. So it's especially effective. It's always effective chanting Krishna's names, but especially in Kali Yuga. Its practical effectiveness will now be explained by Sukadev Goswami through the history of Ajamil, who was freed from the hands of the Yamadutas simply because of chanting the holy name of
Lord Vishnu.
Yes, but what specific name of Lord Vishnu?
Krishna.
But what was his son's name?
Right.
And what was he chanting?
Right.
Yes, thank you. Prakrit Maharaj's original question was how to be freed from falling down into hell or into the hands of the Yamadutas. In reply, Sukadev Goswami is citing this old historical example to convince Prakrit Maharaj of the potency of bhakti yoga, which begins simply with the chanting of the Lord's name. All the great authorities of Bhakti Yoga recommend the devotional process beginning with the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. Tannama Grihanadvi. So in the next verse it describes how he had, although he was a Brahmin, he had so many good qualities. As a youth, he became degraded by associating with a prostitute, and he began to earn his money, because you have a family, you have to maintain your family. So how to maintain your family in a degraded way? He began to maintain his family by doing horrible things. Gambling, plundering, stealing, so many horrible ways. Cheating. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So the first point is how to become free from sin, and the next point is how to be involved in sin and get oneself into trouble, like Ajamil did. This verse indicates how degraded one becomes simply by indulging in illicit sex with a prostitute. Illicit sex is not possible with a chaste or aristocratic woman, but only with unchaste sudras. The more society allows prostitution and illicit sex, the more impetus it gives to cheaters, thieves, plunderers, drunkards, and gamblers. Therefore, we first advise all the disciples in our Krishna consciousness movement to avoid illicit sex, which is the beginning of all abominable life and which is followed by meat-eating, gambling, and intoxication. I've never been into a casino in my life so far, by Krishna's grace. But if you go into a gambling place, what's there? There is gambling, there is illicit sex, there is intoxication, there is meat eating. All these things just go together. They all hold up the pillars. They are the pillars of materialistic life. They all go together. One, of course, restraint is very difficult, but it is quite possible if one fully surrenders to Krishna. Since all these abominable habits gradually become distasteful for a Krishna conscious person. If illicit sex is allowed to increase in a society, however, the entire society will be condemned. It will be full of rogues, thieves, cheaters, and so forth. So Prabhupada is so strong and powerful, and he doesn't care about the contemporary trends in society. Just speaking very bluntly the truth. So Ajamil had a son, even at such a ripe old age. And then he became very attached to the son. But because he was a member of the Vedic culture, Ajamil was, even a degraded member, what did he name his son? Narayan. And that proved to be the greatest fortune in his life. So he took care of the child, enjoyed the child's activities. Prabhupada's purport. Here it is clearly mentioned that the child Narayan was so young that he could not even speak or walk properly. Since the old man was very attached to the child, he enjoyed the child's activities. And because the child's name was Narayan, the old man always chanted the holy name of? Yes, of who? Narayan. He was always chanting, Narayan, Narayan, come here, Narayan. Come and eat with me, Narayan. Narayan, come on. Although he was referring to the small child and not to the original Narayan, the name of Narayan is so powerful that even by chanting his son's name, he was becoming purified. Hariyanama, Prabhupada. Hariyanama, Hariyanama, Eva Kevalam. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore declared that if one's mind is somehow or another attracted by the holy name of Krishna, Tasmat Kenyap Upayena Mana Krishna Nasevayet, one is on the path of liberation. So this is what we really have to do. Somehow or another, become attracted to Krishna's names. It is customary in Hindu society for parents to give their names like Krishna Das, Govinda Das, Narayan Das, and Vrindavan Das. Thus they chant the names Krishna, Govinda, Narayan, and Vrindavan, and get the chance to be purified. So Ajamir was so attached to the boy, but he didn't know that the time of his own death was approaching. Here is Prabhupada's purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is kind to the conditioned soul. Although this man completely forgot Narayan, he was calling his child, saying, Narayan, please come eat this food. Narayan, please come drink this milk. Somehow or other, therefore, he was attached to the name Narayan. This is called agyata sukriti, which means piety that is based without knowledge. Agyata, without knowing what you're doing something good. So that's what he was doing. He was calling out the name of Narayan all the time, but he didn't know really what he was doing. He was calling his son. And the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so transcendentally powerful that his chanting was being counted and recorded. In other words, his heart was becoming purified. But then, while he was dying, and no one knows when they're going to leave this world, foolish Ajamil began thinking of his son, Narayan. You should have corrected me. Prabhupada's purport. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Sukadev Goswami says, Etavan Sankhe Yogabhyam Swadama Parinishtaya Janmalabha Parapumsa Ante Narayana Smriti. Ante means at the end, Narayana means the Lord, and Smriti means to remember. So the thing that is to be gained in this life is somehow or another, attachment has to be developed for the Lord, so that at the end of our life, Ante, what should we do? Narayana Smriti, remember the Lord. The highest perfection of human life, achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by acquirement of mystic power, or by perfect discharge of one's occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. So regardless of what path we're on, this moment of death, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram, whatever one is thinking at the time of death, one will be, go to that place. So how important is the moment of death? In every religious practice, that everyone treats the moment of death as a special moment. It may be also concluded that Ajamil, who was the son of a Brahmin, was accustomed to worship Narayan in his youth, because in every Brahmin's house there is the worship of Narayan Shila, Shalakam Shila. This system is still present in India. In a rigid Brahmin's house there is Narayana Seva, worship of Narayan. Therefore, although the contaminated Ajamil was calling for his son, by concentrating his mind on the holy name of Narayan, he remembered the Narayan, the Lord, that he had faithfully worshipped in his youth. So there are two other... So one could ask, well, was he just remembering his son? So here, it describes, when chanting his son, calling his son, he actually, at this time, remembered the Lord, Narayan, who he had worshipped in his youth. Sridhar Swami, a great commentator on the Bhagavatam, says, I'll just read the English, according to the Bhakti Siddhanta, the Shastric scriptural conclusions in Bhakti, it is to be analyzed that because Ajamil constantly chanted his son's name, Narayan, he was elevated to the platform of Bhakti, although he did not know it. And another comment by another great commentator on the Bhagavatam, Bhargavacharya, he says, although at the time of death he was chanting the name of his son, He nevertheless concentrated his mind upon the holy name of Narayan. And then, as he was dying and he chanted the Lord's name, Narayan, Narayan, who did he see before him? The Yamadutas, distorted and fierce. He was terrified. They began pulling the soul from his body, him from his body. Prabhupada's purport. A person who performs sinful activities performs them with his body, mind, and words. Therefore, three order carriers from Yamaraj came to take Ajamil to Yamaraj's abode. Fortunately, even though he was referring to his son, Ajamil chanted the four syllables of Harinam, holy name of Narayana, four syllables. And therefore, the order carriers of Narayan, the Vishnudutas, also immediately arrived there. Because Ajamil was extremely afraid of the ropes of Yamaraj, he chanted the Lord's name with tearful eyes. Actually, however, he never meant to chant the holy name of Narayan, he meant to call his son. So the Vishnudutas came and they said, no, you cannot take him because he has chanted the name of Narayan. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, another great commentator, remarks, Hari Kirtanam Nisamyapatam Kitam Bhutasya Vortu Nama Bruvataha. The order carriers of Lord Vishnu came because Ajamil had chanted the holy name of Narayan. They did not consider why he was chanting. So liberal was the judgment. While chanting the name of Narayan, Ajamil was actually thinking of his son. But simply because they heard Ajamil chanting the Lord's name, the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnudutas, immediately came for Ajamil's protection. Hari Kirtanam is actually meant to glorify the holy name, form, pastimes, and qualities of the Lord. Ajamil, however, did not glorify the form, qualities, or paraphernalia of the Lord. He simply chanted the holy name. Nevertheless, that chanting was sufficient to cleanse him of all sinful activities. As soon as the Vishnudutas heard their master's name being chanted, they immediately came. So this is so wonderful, because remember the original question was how to save the living entities from suffering in hell. Prickett Maharaj was asking this question. So now the answer is coming. This devotional service is so powerful that not only one can be freed from sins, but that's nothing. That's just with this bhaktarupa bas. Just by chanting inattentively, the holy names are so powerful. Chanting the names, thinking of one's son, Narayan, is so powerful that one is freed from sins. What to speak of if one is chanting with Sudha, Shudanam, with pure love, Premanam. Just how what one can get from chanting in that way, if one can get freed from sins just by chanting casually, almost chanting, meaning with a different intention. So how powerful is Krishna's name? So Krishna's names. So the order carriers of Yamaraj were snatching the soul from the core of Ajamil's heart, and the Vishnudutas forbade him to doing, saying he's purified. You're taking him because he's sinful, but we're saying because he chanted Krishna's names, Narayan's names, there's not a trace of sin left. They forbade him, the Yamadutas, to take the soul. Part of Prabhupada's purport to 31. A Vaishnava who has surrendered to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu is always protected by Lord Vishnu's order carriers. Because Ajamil had chanted the holy name of Narayan, the Vishnudutas not only immediately arrived on the spot, but at once ordered the Yamadutas not to touch him. By speaking with resounding voices, the Vishnudutas threatened to punish the Yamadutas. if they continued trying to snatch Ajmil's soul from his heart. The order carriers of Yamaraj have jurisdiction over all sinful living entities, but the messengers of Lord Vishnu, the Vishnu Dutas, are capable of punishing anyone, including Yamaraj, if he wrongs a Vaishnava. So that immediately after being forbidden to take the soul from Ajmil's body, they were considering him so sinful. They said, "Who are you? Why are you challenging? How have you become so audacious that you're challenging Yamaraj? We're acting on his behalf. Where are you? Why are you doing this? Why are you so foolish? Why are you forbidding us? He's sinful. This is our mission. This is our service. This is our job. To punish the sinful." So Prabhupada, we'll read a short part of his comment in 33. "It should be noted that Ajmil was not yet dead, for the Yamadutas were trying to snatch the soul from his heart. They could not take the soul, however, and therefore Ajmil was not yet dead. This will be revealed in later verses. Ajmil was simply in an unconscious state while the argument was in progress between the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas. The conclusion of the argument was to be a decision regarding who would claim the soul of Ajmil." So the order carriers of Yamaraj, they looked at these beautiful Vishnu Dutas and they said, "Why are you stopping us? You're so powerful, you're so beautiful, you're so wonderful. Why are you stopping us?" We'll read something of Prabhupada's purport there. "Before even being introduced to a foreigner, one becomes acquainted with him through his dress, bodily features, and behavior, and can thus understand his position. Therefore, when the Yamadutas saw the Vishnudutas for the first time, they were surprised. They said, 'By your bodily features, you appear to be very exalted gentlemen, and you have such celestial powers that you have dissipated the darkness of this material world with your own effulgence. Why then should you be endeavoring to stop us from executing our duty?' It will be explained that the Yamadutas, the order carriers of Yamaraj, mistakenly considered Ajmil sinful. They did not know that although he was sinful throughout his entire life, he was purified by constantly chanting the holy name of Narayan. In other words, unless one is a Vaishnava, one cannot understand the activities of a Vaishnava." So when hearing the Yamadutas ask the Yamaraj, "Why are you obstructing us?" the Vishnudutas began to reply. Prabhupada's purport to 37. "The Yamadutas were surprised to see that the Vishnudutas, although polite, were hindering the rule of Yamaraj. Similarly, the Vishnudutas were also surprised that the Yamadutas, although claiming to be servants of Yamaraj, the supreme judge of religious principles, were unaware of the principles of religious action. Thus the Vishnudutas smiled, thinking, 'What is this nonsense that they are speaking? If they are actually servants of Yamaraj, they should know that Ajmil is not a suitable candidate for them to carry off.' So the Vishnudutas then, in the next two verses, question the Yamaraj, 'You're taking him off, taking him away. You want to take him away, asking us, why are we obstructing you? Asking us why we're obstructing you, and that means to us that you don't understand the principles of religion. If you don't understand why we're obstructing you, Yamaraj is the judge of religion, and you're supposed to be his servants. So one would assume that you understand the principles of religion. So we're convinced that you don't understand them because you're taking away a sinful person. So now we're questioning you. What are the principles of religion? What are the symptoms of irreligion? Who should really be punished? Who should not be punished?" So they put these questions to the Yamaraj, the Vishnudutas. And we'll read segments of these two verses in this regard, and we'll read segments of at least one of the purports. This inquiry by the Vishnudutas to the Yamadutas is most important. A servant must know the instructions of his master. The servants of Yamaraj claim to be carrying out his orders, and therefore the Vishnudutas very intelligently ask them to explain the symptoms of religious and irreligious principles. A Vaishnava knows these principles perfectly well because he is well acquainted with the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Lord says, Sarvadhammam pratyajam mamekam sharanam vraja. Give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. This is what Krishna wants. Therefore, surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the actual principle of religion. Those who have surrendered to the principles of material nature instead of religion, instead of Krishna, are all impious regardless of their material position. So this is the dividing line between, the ultimate dividing line between religious and irreligious actions. Are they surrendered to Krishna or are they surrendered to material nature? A little later in the purport. The question posed by the Vishnudutas is very suitable. One who represents someone else must fully know that person's mission. One has to know one's master. One has to know who one is representing. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement must therefore be fully aware of the mission of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Otherwise, they will be considered foolish. All devotees, especially preachers, must know the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so as not to be embarrassed and insulted when they preach. And the final verse we'll read, the purport to the final verse, which is also asking about these questions, the questioning of the Yamadutas by the Vishnudutas. One who has the power to punish others should not punish everyone. There are innumerable living entities, the majority of whom are in the spiritual world and are called Nityamukta, everlastingly liberated. There is no question of judging these liberated living beings. Only a small fraction of the living entities, perhaps one-fourth, are in the material world. And the major portion of the living entities in the material world, 8 million of the 8,400,000 species forms of life, are lower than human beings. They are not punishable. For under the laws of material nature, they are automatically evolving. Human beings who are advanced in consciousness are responsible, but not all of them are punishable. Those engaged in advanced pious activities are beyond punishment. Only those who are engaged in sinful activities are punishable. Therefore, the Vishnudutas particularly inquired about who is punishable and why Yamaraj has been designated to discriminate between who is punishable and who is not. So he wants to know. They want to refine the discrimination of the Yamadutas as to who is punishable, what is the discrimination, how to discriminate between who is punishable and who is not punishable. Because if everyone is punishable, then there's no discrimination necessary except to the degree of punishment. But if not everyone is punishable, some are and some are not, so what are the principles that divide the punishable from the non-punishable? How is one to be judged? What is the basic principle of authority? These are the questions we say raised by the Vishnudutas. So we're moving into some philosophy now, starting on Wednesday, if Krishna allows. We will hear the reply of the Yamadutas as they describe what is religious principles, what are religious principles. Because their point will be, by religious principles, by performance or non-performance of religious principles, one can judge who is punishable and who is not. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. It's too late for questions, but if anyone has any comments... Okay, any urgent, pressing questions?
I'm just on late. Achyapalli's association with the prostitute, will it? Will he lose his past devotional service?
Will it?
Will it cause him to lose...
cover, not lose.
Cover, yeah.
Yes, forget and cover.
Will he lose the...
No,
he done?
It's always there. Whatever one gains in the material world will be lost by time. But whatever results one accumulates by devotional service, even if it's microscopic, the eternal gain and benefit. So, but those eternal gains and benefits, as in the case of Ajamil, can be covered. And when one's covered, one's devotion is covered, then one can't increase it easily because it's out of consciousness, it's forgotten.
What does it mean by
being
all other religions
surrender
onto? What is that?
It means that there are so many religious practices in every religion. But those religious practices, formulas, do's and don'ts, rituals, they all have a purpose. And the purpose of all the religious principles, regardless of the religion, is to bring the soul, the eternal soul, to the point of giving himself fully to God, surrendering. So if one says, I can't surrender to God because I have to do this and this and this and this and this, which the religious formularities, then one is not understanding the point of the religious formulas, the religion, which is the point is to get us to surrender to God. So, and also looking at it from the other point of view, if one surrenders to God, fully gives himself to the service of God, he's already performing the purpose of religion. So when Krishna says sava dhammam pratyaja, he says, his meaning is that this is the beginning of true spiritual life, and all other religious formularities are meant to bring one to the point of giving oneself fully to the service of God. So sava dhammam pratyaja, mame kam, to me only, sharanam raja. And someone may say, well, if I give myself to God, I've committed so many sinful activities, how will I become freed from those activities because I haven't performed the proper atonements? Aham tvam sava papebhyo. Krishna says, I myself will free you from all the sinful reactions just by the practice of devotional service, of surrender, of giving oneself to God. Mokshishami, I will liberate you. Masicha, so don't worry, just give yourself to me. So this is the essence of religion and the beginning of a truly spiritual life.
I thought, like, I didn't think that it meant that it should be all, like the Christians say, I am the light, I am the light and the way, and that how it shall. So I didn't.
Go there, except
for through me.
So is that what I said?
No.
No, I didn't say that. I said that giving one, this is in all religions actually, teach us, you have to give yourself completely to God, and the other formularities are meant to bring one to that point. So regardless of the religion, just like in the Muslim religion, what do the Muslims call the Muslim religion? They don't call it Mohammedanism or Muslim religion. What do they call it?
Islam.
Yes, you know what Islam means? Do you know? It means surrender.
So it doesn't mean by saying surrender, give up, abandon all other religions. It doesn't mean to say abandon all other religions. It just means to stop, to give away.
Means to surrender to God and give yourself completely in His service. That's what it means. Don't let other religious practices, say I could think of some suitable examples, like say if God wants you to do something,
Edward, now is the time for you to...
No, I'm being facetious, but if when, like Arjuna, the best example is Arjuna. Krishna told him to fight on the battlefield in the Bhagavad Gita. And he said, what was Arjuna's reply? I can't fight for this reason and this reason. They were all very religious reasons. Killing is not good. This and that, there'll be so many bad results. So those religious and dharmic duties are meant to bring one to the point of giving oneself fully to Krishna. So when Krishna is asking Arjuna to fight, the highest religious act for Arjuna is what? Fighting. Because that is a complete surrender of the self in Krishna's service. Not that he loses his sense of self, but he gives it to Krishna's service. So that is the final, not the final teaching of religion, but that is the beginning of real religion. And everything else is meant to lead us to that point. Arjuna is the best example. And what did Arjuna do at the end of Bhagavad Gita? He surrendered. Yes, I will act as your instrument. With love and devotion. Not, all right, if you really want me to do it, I'll do it. No, with love and devotion. You are my Lord, I am your servant. I surrender myself to you. Is it clear? Sure. It's the natural position. Being surrendered is the natural consciousness of the soul. And it's the essence of religion. I am yours. I'm your servant. And all true religions teach this. It's the beginning of true religion, bhakti. The beginning of love for Krishna. Until one does that, there is actually no love for Krishna. There's no question of developing love to Krishna and going back to God at Goloka Vrindavan. It's the first step in the path of bhakti. It's not... And everything else leads to that, and it's also bhakti. But that's true bhakti, the giving of the soul and the service, the full-hearted giving of the soul to the service of Krishna, of the Lord. Whether it's God or what? Surrender. Okay? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.